So this is a 1 minute plunge meditation session number 4. It was held July 30th, 2022. All right, so plunge meditation time. Is there anybody new here who hasn't done them before? Aha, so I'll go ahead and kind of talk a little about that just so that everybody has a and also a kind of refresher for people. So the idea is that sometimes when you go to a lecture and people are talking about some sort of spiritual thing about the mind or about life in general, you hear the language and you hear these various states that they talk about and things like that, but it only goes into your intellectual mind and it doesn't really bite deep into your own experience. So this is kind of like bypassing the conceptual mind and going directly towards a direct experience of certain kinds of interesting aspects of the nature of mind. And I'm hoping that some of these will kind of ring a bell with you. I don't know which one would, you know, it could be any of them, where it would be useful to you, like to have an inner experience of this kind of thing, because you hear them talk about and you get an idea of it, but to have an actual inner experience of it, sometimes is, you just don't get to that as often, you know. So that was the idea. And so one day, it was kind of like joking around with some people. I said, how about a 1 minute meditation? You know, it sounded so ridiculous, but I said, well, if you really plunge into it, maybe you'd get something. And so that started out as a kind of an experiment to see if there would be any virtue to doing that. And it turned out that it was very interesting. Lots of things went on. And so I kind of tried to research it out and codify it, and I wrote it down. And so that became this plunge meditation thing. And it just sort of came organically just from trying it out, kind of out of the box kind of activity to do a thing that's, the name of it is really quite descriptive. You plunge into a meditation, which means you let go of all those things you're holding on to and you just fling yourself into it. And I have the paper, what happened is, I have a file on my computer, and over a period of years, I've collected like little cool pithy statements and things, or little issues about mind. And I went through those, and I took out the ones that I thought would be good for plunging, and I tried them out. I came up with about 25 of them or so of these things that are kind of fairly familiar for people who have read a lot about spiritual experiences and things. But anyway, I thought that, you know, to bite deeply into them in a plunge meditation would have some positive effect for people and they would benefit from it. That was the theory. And feedback I'm getting is, yeah, they're at least really interesting, even if they don't do much to your life. I hope they do something, you know, that really benefits life. But even if they're just kind of interesting, it's like a nice, sophisticated entertainment time that we have together. But I think some people said a few people have given this feedback and said, yeah, that really like started a shift in their thinking, and it was very profitable for them to do this. So this is kind of like shotgun approach in the sense that I got a whole bunch of different ones that we've been doing over the past. This is the fourth session. We do about 5 or 6 of them each time. And the idea is I have a bell. I ring a bell and then it's a 1 minute timer. And then the bell rings again. And during that interval, you plunge on this topic. And you'll all be working on the same topic, and I'll describe the topic and kind of go on and on a little bit about it, so I'm sure we're all kind of focused in on the idea of it. But it doesn't necessarily mean that what I get out of it is what you're going to get out of it, right? So it's your own experience of this thing, and it might be quite different from mine, and I'm totally okay with that. it's not like there's a right way to do it or a right answer or anything like that about it. It's for you to experience what happens in within your conscious experience when you do the plunge. So what we do is it's a kind of a mirror, developing of a mental mirroring, where you get to see the nature of your own consciousness within the context of these plunges, right? And then it's so you just know more about what happens when you endeavor to directly know this pithy basic truth kind of a thing. You just get what you get. And so that now you know something about your own mind, what happens. Like, suppose if you just get really confused, that's what you got. That's an area that you're really confused about. You have no clue about what that's about. And yet it's something that you might read in a very important spiritual book or teaching. And what happens with you is you get confused. So that's okay. That's what happens. And so it's just a matter of, you know, it's basically self-knowing. It's knowing the nature of your own mind, your own condition, your own where you're at, like that kind of thing. And also maybe it provides a kind of a breakthrough into really knowing something that you didn't know before, which is, that's the hope really, is that, you know, it's illuminating in some way. There's also, I have a long history of reading a lot of things about spiritual truth and including sutras, Buddhist sutras. I've really been into that for like decades, and other spiritual information. And so this is also, there are really great teachings that get displayed by virtue of the particular plunges, so that you might find them interesting and then you would pursue them to see if you know, they ring a bell for you. It's just, you know, so it's just basically that. All right, let's see. So I really want to emphasize that there's no right answers. You can't really do it wrong, right? And also, I wanted to mention that a plunge can either be a hard plunge or a soft plunge. A hard plunge is like with incredible intention and focus and just grit your teeth and do something like you're boring through a brick wall, you know, with the energy. And a soft plunge is one is where you relax and see what comes. You know, see what arises with that theme in mind, a basic relaxed contemplation state. And I have done both. I've done both, and I found both are profitable in their own time. So you can find out how, that's another thing you can do with this, is see if you like the hard, intense kind of energy, or maybe just the release and relax and surrender into an experience, you know, could go either way. Also, there's a time at the end where you might do a little journaling if you want, where you can take some notes. And you can't write too much because we're going on to the next one, and you might miss the next one. So it's usually just jot down a few notes. Okay. So here's how it works, the practical matter of it. First, there's a pre-plunge practice, and the pre-plunge practice kind of gets you ready. It's like climbing up the ladder on a diving board, you know, and walking to the edge. And so, by the way, can you all hear me okay? Is it loud enough? Yeah, okay. The pre-plunge is three areas, body, speech and mind. So the body is, you get your body ready to plunge, which means you sit up and you make sure that your body is in a place where you're in a position where the energy channels can be open. If you're all hunkered down and crunched over, it's just not as good. History has shown that. I mean, look at, have you ever seen a picture of somebody meditating from 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago? It's been around for a long time. There's a certain kind of position that just seems to have, everybody has realized over centuries what's better, and it's, you know, back straight, head balanced, relaxed, you know, that meditation posture. That's the body part. The speech part is to get out of your conceptual mind a little bit, You're going to have a direct experience, an immediate experience of the thing you're plunging, and you're not going to be figuring out or trying to diagnose things. You're not trying to figure, think. So you're going to kind of intentionally say, okay, I'm just going to be present here. And that's the third one, mind. In this case, it means you're going to be really present for it. So you're going to be right on the edge of the diving board with your toes over the edge, ready to plunge, right? It's like that. And then I'm going to ring the bell and I'll say, begin. And then you do the thing. And then the bell, after 1 minute, the bell ends it. And you do the post plunge practice, which is you stay with it a little bit and let it sink in what happened by doing that. In other words, if you had a change of state or anything like that, you kind of let that sink in. You notice it. You take time to notice any change of state or any insight, anything, right? And you give that a minute or so to let it. Somebody said you should never really end a meditation like an axe chopping something. You sort of never have it end. It kind of then becomes a part of your life, the benefit of the meditation. So it's like letting it kind of linger there for a while and until its freshness naturally subsides. So that's the post-plunge. I'll keep just reminding you about those different pieces. Any questions? No? Okay. So the first one is one that we've done before, but it's kind of like so basic, I feel that it's worthy of doing each time. And it's, what do you do to know that you are aware? It's a pure experience of where you go to realize that you are aware. Do you follow that? It's what you do internally to tune in to your own awareness, to the awareness that you have right now. And I'm not talking about a high state or a low state or a special state, just the fact that you're awake and functioning, you know. It could be a high state or it could be just normal. It could be blah. It could be anything. But what do you do to know that you are in fact aware, right? Which means that it's basically you become aware of your awareness. All right, so for 1 minute, we're going to do that. We're going to plunge in to noticing what we do to know that we are aware. All right, so the pre-plunge practice is get your body nice and straight and relaxed. Make sure that you don't carry a lot of tension in the upper body so that it also frees your mind by doing that. And make sure that you're not just going to try to do an intellectual process. You're going to just do pure experience. So you're not going to tell a story about it. You're just going to see what happens when you become aware of becoming aware. What goes on there when you become aware of your awareness? All right? And you're right on the edge of this thing now. You're ready to go. I'm gonna start the bell here any second now. What do you do to know that you are aware? So get nice and settled and ready. And we're gonna do 1 minute. Begin. Good. Now just see what happened from your doing that. So just let that sink in. If you want to write something down, take a note of what it, anything you notice that you'd want to remember, you could do that now. Let's do that one more time. We tend to do these twice because the second one tends to allow you to go deeper because the novelty is kind of worn off and it's now fresh on a different level. So you want to do, let's do another one. So get your body nice and orderly. Get your mind out of the way, so to speak. Maybe take a breath, you know. Be right on the leading edge of this thing. Begin. Okay, good. Just notice what that did. What you recognize, what's in your awareness. The interesting thing about this is it really makes you look at what's going on inside, you know, really like fresh, just sort of compelling almost, like, what's it really like in there, so to speak? Let's do another one. This one, as all you, some of you have done this one before, and I thought I would go to reintroduce it, and that is experience a thought as a thought. Like we're always thinking, and what we do during this 1 minute is when a thought arises, you know that it's a thought. This comes from a tradition called Satipatthana, Foundations of Mindfulness. It's the underpinnings of Vipassana. Vipassana is called insight meditation, right? Insight, where you get insights. And the reason you get insights is because of the Satipatthana, which is the sort of being with what you do, paying attention and knowing what's going on, being really present in the moment. There are various levels and stages and organization to the whole thing to make it easy to make progress, but the essence of it is in the Satipatthana Sutra, or the Maha Satipatthana Sutra, it goes with really detailed, and it's kind of like, this is one of them, sort of, this is one, it's sort of that, which is that you notice a thought as a thought. You see the mind within mind. You see what's going on. And instead of just thinking the thought, you, when the thought arises, you know that it's a thought. That's all. That's very esoteric in a way, but see where you go with this. See what that description engenders. So, experience a thought as a thought. So, when a thought arises during that minute, all you have to do is know that it's a thought. That's it. That's the whole challenge. It's knowing that it's a thought, and sometimes the thought. And watch what happens. Where the thoughts come from and where you're at when a thought arises and the time delay between having a thought and realizing that you just thought a thought. Is that too weird? check it out. Just see where it takes you. See what it seems like. Okay. All right. So let's try it. Get your body, speech, and mind pre-process going here. Get ready. This one's going to take some real clarity to make this work, because for some people know they've done this so many times, noticing their thinking, that it's trivial. And other people go, what are you talking about? So let's just see where you're at with this, realizing a thought is a thought. Okay? Whatever a thought is to you. Okay, so here you go. Ready? Get ready, get focused. Notice what happens. Okay, check that out. Let that change of state sink in a little bit. You know, I believe some people feel more than they think. And so I wouldn't want this to be constrained too much to just think like a verbal thought. It could be noticing what feeling, and knowing that you're feeling the feeling. You follow that? It doesn't have to be an intellectual thought, like, oh, how does this feel, blah, 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 you know, blah, 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 mental talk. It could also be because if you're in a fairly empty state, there may be just feelings. So what you would do is you'd say, oh, it's a feeling, you know, which is thought and feeling. I'm sort of capturing the broadest sense of a thought. It could be include feelings, certain kinds of feelings.
Is that what they mean by mental formations? I never quite understood that.
Mental formations are more in alignment. They're the five skandhas: form, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness make up the pile of stuff that makes up a sense of being, right? And the mental formations have to do with more of like your intentions, like what you're up to, what you're doing, that kind of thing. Okay, one more time. Let's do it. This is experiencing a thought of a feeling or a feeling as a thought or a feeling. What you want to do is see it. What you want to do is, or get it. You want to get it. Ready? Begin. Okay. Let's see what that was like. So, you know, it's the essence of mindfulness, which is at the heart of enlightenment in many traditions. So if you're into enlightenment, mindfulness is, this kind of mindfulness of seeing what's going on is at the heart of it, according to Buddha, not me. And it's this reflective noticing what's going on. It's this being with what you do in a conscious way. And it's an interesting thing, because if you practice this, what happens is you begin to notice that you're, in a sense, being an observer of a phenomenon that's internal to your mind, and where you're standing to observe that is a very pure place of pure awareness. And that one of the great practices is to deepen that sense of that pure awareness that can observe what goes on internally. It becomes like home base, and it flips everything around, in a sense, to where you see the world as a display of cosmic energy of sorts, rather than get all entangled and enmeshed and subject to emotional and crazies and problematic states. By doing that practice of mindfulness like that, you establish a root, a grounded place, so to speak. You know what I mean? A place where you can see it, you can observe the phenomena of what occurs in your own body as something that you can then deal with, rather than being identified with it. And like I've said before, like, there's a difference between being angry and notice that there's an angry feeling in your body. You know, being angry is different than that. That's when you're not being mindful. And when you're mindful, you notice that the anger has arisen. It's not the same as being angry. That's an identification. That's what identification means, is that the experience that you're having is you're identified with it, and therefore it is your reality, so to speak. And from the absolute, it's just a dream. It's just a phenomena. It's just the magic of what life is, you know. It's just unfolding, this thing. And that's a form of liberation from being bound by conditions. Something like that, anyway. All right, let's go. Now this one might be kind of fun. It's thought holding. Thought holding. And so what it is that maybe if you have developed the ability to visualize something, you could just visualize something simple, like a cat or a tree or anything. If you think a thought, it could be that thought. Like, you think, this is a pretty day. And what you want to do is, for 1 minute, don't let that thought get away. Hold the thought still in your consciousness. Hold your consciousness bound to that thought, and don't let it leave that thought. Pounce on it, grab it, hold on as tight as you can, and don't let the thought get away. Okay? Sometimes we did it with just a ball in the mind, a colored ball, like a red ball or a blue ball. But you could have it be anything that's easy for you. It's just what arises with that intention. You'll have a thought. And what you want to do is you want to hold that thought. Now, it doesn't matter what the thought is. I want you to understand, it's not about the content or meaning of the thought. It has to do with the nature of mind. And so what you want to do is hold that steady and keep it there. And if it gets away, jump back on it and grab it again. So just grab that thing and don't let it get away. and be very intentional about it. Okay? See, just check that out. I don't know. I hope it works for you. You ready? Okay, here we go. So get poised on your diving board and get ready for this holding the thought, whatever that will be for you. Ready? All right? You won't let it get away, right? Okay, you can let it go now. So that's a window into what the mind is like. One time I was holding a thought and it would like skitter off to the side and I'd have to drag it back. And then it would skitter back off to the side. I couldn't make it stay still. So we used to be in enlightenment intensive. It was hold your question, where you'd work on who am I or something. You'd hold your question. And I think a lot of us didn't realize just how intrinsically difficult that is to hold any state or anything in mind. You know, there's a way of being with something, maybe negotiate with your mind in a way to stay with something and or bring yourself back to something over and over and over, or maybe what's the word, kind of like you become absorbed. If you're absorbed in something, then it's sort of like there whether you want it to be or not, you know. But to intentionally put something in your mind, it's like it's really bounces around, some, at least for most people. Let's try one more time. Do a second one. Begin. If you want to make a note or something in your journal, you can. I had a goal years ago. I guess I was in college. It was after college. It was later on in college. I thought that if I could clearly imagine a slide rule, that I could do math in my head much easier. I would just slide the slide rule and do the thing. There's these the way a slide rule works is you can add logarithms to do multiplication. So I could do multiplies if I could just get a really crystal clear image of a slide rule in my mind. It would be so cool. I wouldn't need a pocket calculator to do math. It's just, it's so rubbery. It could be anything I wanted, you know, or what I didn't want. It was hopeless. Maybe somebody could do it, but I couldn't. All right. So listen, let's take a 5-minute break and then come back and do a few more, okay? So come back at like 10 till 10. All right. Okay. Cool. See you then. Short time out for a break. We're gathering again. A little relaxed. All right. This next one is an interesting one. Maybe there's a little backstory to it, which is that particular kind of Tibetan Buddhist level, there's a thing called Dzogchen, and then Dzogchen has been articulated by a number of different great masters historically. And one of them, the sort of the founding guy for this particular way of regarding life, was named Gerb Dorji. And he gave the three statements that strike the essential points, kind of like the great summation of everything he'd learned, and he was a great teacher. I think if people read him, it doesn't mean much. But if you're in the right place, in the right state, it means a lot. One is you are introduced into the nature of mind. That's sort of like what we're doing here in a broad sense. You're introduced to the nature of mind. Second one is that you are, you decide upon it, which means that given what you realized, day by day, you have to choose that or some illusory thing. You know, there was this distinction made, and so you're deciding upon it. And the third one is just continue with confidence. And that's the whole thing. I love it because it's so succinct. It's just these three things: nature of mind, and then the process of, basically it's kind of integration of deciding upon it, and then just continue with confidence. And the continue with confidence is the one that this one is on, and that is basically a state of being confidently present for truth. There's a state, a distinct state, confidently present for truth. Imagine being in that state of being confidently present for truth. And for truth, what that means is the real truth that to you is the truth. The thing that kind of drives us is we're sort of truth seekers, right? I mean, broadly speaking, we're truth seekers. And so confidently present for truth, for this truth. All right. So for 1 minute, see if you can refine that and deepen that, being confidently present. By present is you're being with this moment. Being present is you're fully with this moment. So confidently present for truth. All right. And just see what comes up for you if you set out to do that. Okay? All right, so get your body nice and relaxed and your back straight and all that stuff, and do confidently present for truth. The confidently part is interesting, because I know that when you're not being confident, you're thinking largely of ways you can fail, ways you're not adequate to the task, assumptions that you're just not up to it. And those, that's a mental state. I mean, there may be a lot of reasons why you feel that way, like, you know, successive failures over and over and over, but even so, it's a mental state that's not particularly useful. Whereas the confident is, it comes from the Latin con, and it means with faith. And I think it means with faith in your capacity to eventually break through. That's what confident means. Confident isn't about whether you have that ability already. It's looking to a point where it'll happen. You know what I mean? There's a faith in yourself, in the faith in the, not just in yourself, but in the nature of the whole thing. There is a sense that with the proper intent and with maybe disciplines or whatever, you have faith that you will make it, and it eliminates doubt and the sort of whirlpools of negative energies that sometimes come up in the mind that are debilitating and not useful. So confidently present for the truth is a beautiful, penetrating state that Gerb Dorji recommends, this guy from, I think he's just a few hundred years after Buddha lived. I had an experience back in 1998 of the Dzogchen, the essence of Dzogchen, during an enlightenment intensive. It was a 7-day in Hawaii that Osho Rita and I were leading. And it was probably one of the more life-changing experiences I had in meditation in anything I've done. The fact that I read those three statements and they went in like a laser beam into my brain, and suddenly everything, I don't know why, but everything just totally made sense. So, and that third one was really very powerful in that context. There's those choices that you make to make life better that comes from realization of the nature of your own mind, of how you're creating your own reality, of how you conjuring up your state. And knowing the nature of mind, which is like experiencing a thought as a thought or a feeling as a feeling. Confidence is that tapping into that energy that you have, that source within you that can create success, that can create progress, that can move you out of states that are useless that you're trying to get over. It's really good to have a positive thing rather than dealing only with a negative thing. You know what I mean? You can get stuck in trying to fix negative aspects of your character or your feeling states. Whereas if you have a positive thing, in a way you leave that stuff behind, and the positive thing becomes dominant, and that's what you wanted anyway. So let's do another minute of that as an introduction to this confidently being present for truth. Whatever truth, however you want to hold that sense of truth, you know, in the sense of where we're going, you know, headed for an ultimate truth or something. However you like to hold that, just confidently present for success, maybe, or for being there. Okay, here you go. Ready? Ready for the 1 minute plunge? Just plunge right into this. Okay. So if one has access to that at various times in their lives, it may be the thing that extracts you out of a negative state and gives you a positive flow, you know. And if you cultivate a nice, strong sense of that, it certainly could be life-changing. All right, so remember we were doing awareness of awareness before? Pure awareness aware of itself. Okay. There's something to notice within pure awareness aware of itself. And that is that there is a sense of self-knowing, that you know yourself in that state. So the focus here is on the knowing, right? So pure awareness, aware of itself, you detach awareness from what it's being aware of, whether it's mental flotsam and jetsam, or whether it's things in the world around you, noises, objects, themes, past issues, whether it's things you're concerned about, whether it's plans you have in the future, all those things. Whatever is your awareness tends to be going into at this moment, at the moment, what you want to do is detach your awareness from that and be aware of the awareness, pure awareness itself, just the fact that you're sentient in this moment, and that's pure awareness being aware just of itself. You follow that? That's a kind of a prerequisite for this one. Pure awareness, aware only of itself. It's pure when it's only aware of itself. That's what the pure in this sentence means. Pure awareness is awareness that is just experienced. It's like the candle can illuminate the room, but it also illuminates itself. You see, it glows. Right, and so if you imagine that it's awareness being aware of itself, so pure awareness aware of itself. If you will have that for a moment, you can notice within that experience the knowing, the self knowing, the knowing self, that essence which knows. So see what you can do with that. You follow that? It's pretty subtle at times. Some people find it easy, others hard. Don't worry about it. Just see where this takes you. Pure awareness, aware only of itself, and then notice the self-knowing quality of that. It's the self-knowing quality that's the emphasis here. Okay, you knowing yourself. Okay? See where you go with this. So get ready on that edge. Make sure your body's ready to do this. Your focus. Okay, this intrinsic knowingness that awareness is, it's not knowing about something, it's just the presence of knowing, the capacity to know, the capacity to be connected, or I don't know how to put it really, but there's this intrinsic self-knowing quality to pure awareness being aware of itself. If you want to write anything down, you can. All right. So that's kind of an interesting one. For those who just arrived, we were doing the plunge. The particular plunge we're on. We went through a bunch of them, but this one was the self-knowing quality of awareness. And what it was that when you, within all of your experience, if you can somehow deduce or become conscious of the fact of the awareness, independent in a sense of what it's aware of, that's really the entry point to this. And that's probably the hardest part, is seeing the difference between what you're aware of and your capacity to be aware. It's a really key piece of the puzzle. Kind of acknowledgement of something that you bring to the party, and that is this awareness. Otherwise, it's just dark. Nothing's happening. It's your awareness is the illuminating quality to the experience that you're having. It's your light. Right? It's your consciousness. It's your capacity to know. That's what we're getting at here. And if that isn't there, you're like a zombie. There's just a mechanical, or like a robot. There's nobody home. Right? Awareness is who's home, sort of. It makes things have a feeling, or have a way it is for you. The awareness is that essence, that thing that makes it so that you are having an experience, that there is something the way it is for you on a very basic level. And so what you want to do is like distill out of all the possible experiences you can have the essence of what illuminates that experience. And I'm just calling that awareness or consciousness, right? So it's your capacity to know, your capacity to have an experience that's yours, that's your unique experience because you're alive, because you're awake. If you were unconscious, utterly unconscious, it wouldn't even be a black nothing. It'd be less than a black nothing. But because there is awareness, there is all this that you can be experiencing. And so what we're doing is we're sort of tuning into that sense of like that aliveness, that the light of being. And we're noticing that if we can just be aware of that alone by itself without the objects of what it's aware of, such as the room you're in or the thoughts you're having or the feelings you're having, if you have pure awareness, aware of itself, if you look at that really closely, there is a self-knowing element to that. And that's what we're tuning into, is this sense of this intrinsic knowing of being, right? It comes with pure awareness, being aware of itself. What we want to do is just become familiar with that aspect of being with our mind. It's the nature of mind. You just want to be familiar with the fact that that's a part of how you roll, you know, of what it means to be a human being alive, is that you have this capacity to illuminate the world in consciousness. And if you focus on just that capacity, and just hold that very clearly of awareness, purely aware of itself, there is this intrinsic self-knowing that is right in there. It's intrinsic means it's the same as, it's not different. It's a part of it. It's natural. It's a natural part. Let's try it again with that kind of with that kind of description. Let's see where that takes you. See what happens when you try to live that in one way or another, okay? All right, so do your pre-plunge preparation. Get ready, feet on the ground, you know, because you really want to be focused here. You really want to be undistracted, and you want to plunge into pure awareness, being aware of itself, and within that, notice the intrinsic self-knowing quality of that. Self-knowing, knowing yourself. Okay? Okay. My intention is to end a little early today because it felt like 2 hours is a little long. An hour and a half is about right, maybe a little longer than that. So, because there's a sort of fatiguing quality to this, it's actually asking a lot of you. Okay, so this next one this should be really fun. And that is when your body dies, it's going to be very real to you when your body dies. And pretty much we're all going to die, right? I mean, pretty much not, maybe not the essence being. I mean, it depends on your spiritual belief system, whether what happens to the essence of your consciousness. But when the body dies, it seems like just about everybody going to die that way physically. There's this moment of death when you realize you're on the way out, you know, and it's suddenly very, very real. It's not just out there in the future of some abstraction. It's like in this moment, it's like, oh shit, or whatever it happened, whatever your particular state is. That one came to mind in the moment, but like, oh shit. Everything that has value is suddenly going to be turned asunder in a way. There's going to be this moment of death. So that's the plunge, I don't want you to die right now. So there's no intention of you falling off your chair. Hey, you were very successful in this plunge. No, but to go to the most real sense of your moment of death, of what your intuition, what your sense of yourself, what your sense of being alive, of you, what's going to happen at that moment of death. Not a speculation of whether there's an afterlife or not, but the trying to get as real as you can that this is going to happen. And think of it as happening now. So it's kind of a postulate, an idea that is happening right now. Where will you be at that moment when you die? You die, meaning the body dies, because I don't want to put a thing on whether there's an afterlife or anything like that. Maybe there will be, maybe there won't be. I'm not putting that out, but that realization of that at this moment, lights out or whatever, right? So if you're willing to, see if you can most honestly confront the moment of death. Most real, most honest, most true, without avoidance. See where that takes you. See what happens. At the worst, you'll just go crazy and be ruined by this, but hopefully that will not happen. So there's a little risk here. Okay, so get ready. You're going to go to the moment of your death. Ready? So get ready for it. Get ready. The real, you know, let me just stop a second. There was a time, we did an intensive, What is Death? We did a whole 3-day enlightenment intensive. And a number of people in my intensives worked on What is Death. And afterwards, I remember these times I'd be walking around like downtown or something, and my mind would go to that place where this was all meaningless in a sense of being alive in it. You know what I mean? Like it changed the meaning of the moment so dramatically, and I would shudder, and it would really affect me. And I, whoa, like that. So, and that was happening quite a while after that as I engaged in it. And there's a sort of a taboo culturally about facing that moment. So in a way, it gets us over that taboo by doing this, okay? So anyway, just sort of throw that in. Okay, so here we go. Ready? Take a breath. Buddha said that it was one of the best things to meditate on. You know, there's the Tibetan Book of the Dead about the bardos and all that stuff. They really get into it. There's a reflection about what it is to be alive. Like it gives a visibility to being alive. What that is. Like when you go to that moment of death, it makes being alive more clear, more vivid in a sense. And it informs you about being alive as well. So it has a kind of interesting side effect. We'll do it one more time. And then maybe just a one at the end. And then we'll call it a day. All right, so here we go. A nice journey into that aspect of mind of the elimination of being here in this body. All right? So experience for you the moment of death, the actual moment when it really really, really happens. the Tibetans have a tradition of always keeping their death in mind, sort of. And I remember when Steve Jobs gave a talk. I knew Steve because I worked at Apple for a while. And he gave a talk when he found out that he had terminal cancer and how transforming it was, how it changed his values, how he looked at things differently. We all know this, right? We've heard that story. And, you know, have the guts to take it on, you know, that the reality of our impermanence, as they say. All right. So we have maybe just one more, right? And then we'll call it a day. I'm sure you guys are really put in a lot of juice into this. And this one is the one I'd like to end with, which is wishing others well, which is the metta, the sentiment of wishing, it really, truly wishing others well, not just kind of doing it like as a perfunctory thing, but in your heart really finding that already existing sense that if you had your druthers, everybody would be happier. You know, it would be best if the world was better and that people were happy, and you want to wish others well. And not just maybe people, but anything that is sentient. It could be animals too. That there was this harmony or this positive sense. I think that there's this thing that's our inherent enlightened nature, which does in fact wish others well. And it sometimes gets covered over with being mad at somebody or disagreeing or something, but fundamentally you wish that it would work out for others too. And so there's this thing, it's called metta. It's a thing about wishing others well. So for a moment, maybe we'll just do it once. We'll just do it once. See if you can go to that place of well-wishing, of pure openness to another, including yourself. Happiness, basically, or fulfillment, or in some way, the best. Right, the best that our instincts tell us is possible, at least in principle. Right, wishing others well. Right, take 1 minute to just really give in, just give that fully everything you got. Right. Just let your neural nets absorb that. Make that a part of your nature, maybe. Let it sink in. All right. So that was what session number 4 was like. And thank you all. I'm thinking we'll do one more of these. And then decide whether to continue or not. But I originally thought it would take about 5 to really put this kind of technique into the wild, so to speak. And I wrote it up so that anybody who wants to teach it to other people or do it with others, It's all on that paper that pretty much describes the whole thing, and you've had the experience of what it's like, and you've seen the example of it. So just if you think that you want to share this around with other people or take pieces or parts of it, you know, just however you want to put this into the world or not, you know, maybe just you won't, whatever. But I think we'll just do one more session. Invite your friends in case you want to, you know, want them to have such a this kind of an experience, and we'll do it again maybe in 3 weeks or so, be on a Saturday morning. I'll make sure everybody gets an email with a link on it. It's always the same link, by the way. It turns out it's just the way Zoom does it. I didn't realize that, but yeah, just come and join in. We'll do it for an hour and a half or an hour and three quarters. I'll have a bunch of new plunges to try. Or maybe, tell you what, if you did any plunge in the past that you really liked, that really felt good, let me know what it is. And the ones that kind of resonate with you, maybe include that next time, you know, so that you get your favorites, your favorite plunges. Have a beautiful day. And
thank you, Edward.
Thank you all. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you, Edward.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Edward.
All right. Blessings
to
all of
you. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye,
folks.
Bye, Edward. Thank you.
Thank you, Edward.
All righty. Bye-bye.